Okay, today I want to say more about the higher genus story. So, roughly, we'll be using this direct connection between n equals 1 systems and topological strings, kind of type B, on some complex Calabi-Yau threefold. And B model means that we are looking at deformations of the complex structure. And of course, these B models are related to A models. So there are the topological strings of type A on some mirror. So mirror symmetry. We'll connect it to an A model where we, of course, do deformations of the Kähler structure. And in some sense, in this side, the higher genus terms are really well defined because you're just computing instantons or Gromov-Witten invariants, which you can do at any degree in any genus. But somehow the full genus expansion of this B model, well, formally it's the so-called Cordaro-Spencer theory, quantum Cordaro-Spencer theory. So there is some kind of an ansatz for the, well, there's a formula for kind of a closed topological string field theory, which is like a cubic theory. But it's very difficult to actually work with that theory directly. So we will kind of approach it slightly differently. And we also have to address the question. So in general, what you will do on either of these two models, you compute kind of genus G invariants, FG, which will depend on the moduli. So in our case, they will depend, for instance, in the models I've discussed before, on the closed string moduli, the complex structure moduli of this Calabi-Yau, which were these SIs and TIs. And here, it's a little bit more subtle story what the higher genus invariants are. So naively, it's only genus 0 which enters. So the two important formulas at genus 0 were that the effect of superpotential was given by this derivative of the free energy at genus 0. And then you could also compute the effect of gauge coupling, so the kind of the period matrix tau ij of the U1 theory, which was given by the second derivative of F0. And so, but this is all kind of genus 0 information, and that resonates with the fact that only the planar diagrams naively compute were the ones contributing to this theory. So this essentially computes for you the chiral ring. And this computes for you the kind of U1 to the N couplings. And that's the fast way to make, for instance, connection with the Seibert-Witten curve. So this essentially computes the same period matrix that Seibert and Witten obtained using their methods. So what about the higher genus invariants? So there's one intriguing observation by Oguri and Vafa, who showed the following thing, that if you, so in general, we have this kind of spinner field strengths, W alpha, these Lie algebra valued objects. And they introduced kind of a non-anti-commuting deformation of these guys. So if you write this, basically make this into a Clifford algebra, so you write here some matrix C alpha beta, symmetric spinner two-form, which is the same thing as a self-dual two-form in four dimensions, times the identity matrix. Well, then you can see already many things happening. For instance, for one thing, the algebra of the Ws, and so also the chiral ring, becomes non-commutative, which means that in particular, if you will have a chiral ring, the chiral ring will not be diagonalizable or will not be semi-simple. And that means that you cannot use this kind of naive factorization that, in some sense, is part of the structure of the chiral ring, and which was this kind of very fast way to understand why planar diagrams could be relevant. So in some sense, you destruct here, you know, naively, you destruct the planar, this kind of planar limits. And you can expect that also diagrams of a higher genus contribute. And indeed, they show very nicely that in that case, you have a whole series. Actually, you can make an expansion in this field C. You can take it to be constant. And now the diagrams at arbitrary genus will contribute if you just make a power series expansion in C. So that's one way to set up a problem which actually computes higher genus invariants. it's not quite clear, perhaps, what the precise physical meaning of that is. Yes, yes. And it's clear that somehow the chiral ring structure, and that has been analyzed in some detail, if you wish, the loop equations that you could derive in the field theory, they not necessarily factorize anymore because this obstruction, essentially. A more kind of physical story is to couple the theory, so couple the gauge theory to gravity. So for instance, put it on a curved four-manifold. So we have some four-manifold M4 with some metric. And then there will be an induced term. So there will be induced term, which is integral over this four-manifold. And then there will be some function f that depends on these Gugino fields s. And then there will be a term which goes like r plus wedge r plus, where r plus is the self-dual part of the curvature, plus, of course, the complex conjugate part, so where the anti-holomorphic part of f couples to the anti-self-dual part of the curvature. So this is a term that you can compute. Let me write down the claim for that answer. So the claim is the following. This f of s has two parts. It has kind of a genus zero part, which you can write as ni, nj, tau ij. And then there is a genus one part. So this s tau depends on s. And genus one part, which is computed partly by the genus one diagram. So this has two contributions. Where both, so it's very important to recall that all these functions f of g consist of two parts. A part, kind of a non-perturbative part, which I call fg star, so that's it's somehow coming from the gauge theory. And then there is a perturbative part, which can be computed in the matter theory. So these gauge theory contributions, kind of non-perturbative contributions, they can be actually, in some sense, they are defined through the matrix model. So my claim was that the matrix model computes these things all together. So in particular, we can use this kind of matrix model with the canonical normalization. So if you normalize with the volume of the gauge group, so we compute this matrix model trace W, and write this as e to the exponent of f, where f has this decomposition in contributions of various terms in 1 over n or in G string, then from this, if you use this kind of definition, the fg stars are, or the whole f star will come from this normalization factor, which is minus the log of the volume of this group un tilde, where, and remember, the connection with S and N is always through this connection that the Hoofdkoppeling G string times N tilde is S. So if you use this definition, you find the following answer. So FG star, so at genus zero, you get this term 1/2 S squared log S, which is essentially the Venetiano-Yankelevich term. But for instance, at genus one, you find the term 1/24 log S. So this is somehow the gravitational analog of that term. And similarly, at genus g, you find a term that goes like, the nicest way to write it is it computes some expression in Bernoulli numbers, but essentially the Euler number of the genus, the moduli space of Riemann surfaces at genus g, times a term which goes like s to the 2 minus 2g. So these terms here, we will meet again today. They also are given by the genus expansion of the sequence one matrix model at the self-dual radius. And this connection is not an accident, as I'll hope to show. So they have some kind of nice topological interpretation. So even in this formula here, both of these objects have a perturbative, if you wish, and a non-perturbative contribution. So if you write kind of the gate theory contribution, you will see that from this first part, you get something which looks like an I squared log log SI. If you do it for more than one gate theory factor. And this one actually gives, there's a factor of 1 over 24, I think. Not sure what I'm doing here. I think I'm missing a factor 1 over 24. Okay, so it's good. And then here there's a minus over 24 log s coming. So it's kind of interesting to look at these contributions of these two terms, because both of them look naively like a one-loop contribution. But this one is a one-loop contribution where roughly n squared degrees of freedom are propagating. So this I would like to see as like a contribution at recoupling, where the gauge bosons are running around. So your computer really is some determinant with n by n fields. And this term has just a log s with a 1 in front of it. So this means that it's like it's a single field running around. And that looks like that this is somehow kind of a strong coupling contribution, where in some sense kind of confinement has taken place. There's only one degree of freedom running around. So in some sense, these two terms, if you wish, the difference of the two terms are precisely the number of degrees of freedom that are kind of disappearing when you go to strong coupling. Anyhow, you can add these terms to. So the claim now is that this term over here has this term plus a sum over genus 1 diagrams. And this has this term plus a sum over genus 0 diagrams. So this is a very specific place where the genus 1 diagrams appear. They are included in this particular gravitational correction. It's a little bit confusing also that there are these genus 0 contributions. But one observation which is important, that if you look at this contribution and you look at the critical points of the effect of superpotential, then you get some identity which reads, I think, ni tau ij equals tau 0, where tau 0 is the, so this is just differentiating this expression for the effect of superpotential. You get an identity like that. If you plug it back in that formula, you will see that the first term will be something, will be ni nj tau ij, so we have this plus F1, but this first term will now just turn in n times tau 0 plus F1. So this term is, if you wish, constant. So if you do the actual field theory perturbation diagrams, you find lots of genus 0 information contributing to the gravitational correction. But then if you minimize the effect of superpotential, so that doesn't depend anymore on the SIs, but only on the parameters in the potential and the gauge coupling, then this whole term becomes as n times tau 0. And if you remember that in string theory, tau 0 is basically 1 over the string coupling constant, then this is just the tension of the original brains by which you engineered the system. So this is just a constant, an overall constant, that just, if you wish, the tension of the brains that were responsible for the gauge system. And so all the interesting physical information is now in the non-planar diagrams. But again, if you want to move up and want to do general higher genus contributions, you either have to take this non-commutative deformation or some other way to get have a gate theoretical interpretation for the higher genus string contributions. This is some kind of gravitational analog. Well, you know this, for instance, very well if you do, for instance, it's the usual shift. Like if you, for instance, do it on K3, where you know that if you put a zero brain, there's an induced four-brain charge. So this is just the analog of that. Well, so this is if you use the holomorphic tension, so they are kind of connected, right? So this is just, so you know this very well for the theta term. And so since, because of holomorphy, you should be, this should be an old, yes. So I kind of want to leave from now on the this connection with gate theory and turn to kind of the study of these topological strings by themselves, because I think there's a very nice way to encode the full genus expansion, and I want to make contact with other kind of non-critical strings. So I want to think about kind of, yeah, so what is this kind of quantum Calabi-Yau, by which I mean the full topological string, the B topological string, so including all genus corrections. And I want to kind of take this matrix model as some kind of a guiding tour. So remember what we found for, in certain cases we have the old genus answer. For instance, this matrix model provided an old genus answer. So let me review a few aspects of that I found interesting. So what we found that from the matrix model, we had this algebraic curve, y squared, and then there was some polynomial here that I wrote like this, but in general, some polynomial of degree 2n in x. And the second thing I did, I wanted to write y of x. So we had in the matrix model, we had the following description for it. It was given, so I wanted to write it as the derivative of some field phi, where phi was essentially the collective field of the matrix model. And that had an interpretation. So if w, the original superpotential, was tk phi to the k, then this gauge field, this scalar field, has an expansion k tk x to the k minus 1 plus a term, a quantum term, which was trace 1 over x minus phi, which was the matrix model resolvent. So the important thing is that we saw that in some sense this field, so how do I want to think about it? Well, I want to think of this. This is the picture I want to present. So we have coordinates x and y in this case. And we have a Calabi-Yau manifold, a very simple Calabi-Yau manifold, which was of the following form. So there were two kind of dummy variables, u and v. And then there was a relation between x and y. So you want to think of this as some kind of curve in this xy plane, where, so this is just the curve fxy equals 0. So we have y as a function of x. And now what do we want to do? We want to kind of, in general, we are instructed in the B model to look at complex structure variations of this curve. So we want to look like a family of these curves. And of course, so you have to be a little bit more careful and draw this really as a Riemann surface. So in general, we have a picture where this curve will be some Riemann surface like this. And it will have kind of asymptotic ends, things going to infinity. And so you want to kind of, instead of thinking of one of these asymptotic ends, we can also think of kind of compactifying it somehow and just say we have some local coordinate here. And there is some point P at infinity, where P infinity is really the point where this x, this local coordinate, is sent to infinity. So we have some kind of local coordinate on that Riemann surface. And now we want to kind of look locally at the deformation of the Riemann surface. So what is locally a deformation of the Riemann surface? Well, we just change this y in some sense. So there is a df of x here. So how are we going to encode that variation? Well, we're going to write this as f of x plus some Taylor series, which I now write is just inspired by that formula over there. It's a power series in x, where, of course, here we have the positive powers. But in general, there will also be subleading corrections. And the subleading corrections I just write here as fk x to the minus k minus 1. So in general, we just have a Taylor series expansion. And these are the terms which really change the function. So these go to 0 at large x. But these, of course, change really the behavior of the function at infinity. So we are kind of doing a local deformation of this complex structure. And then we want to do, of course, is see, well, to which extent does this kind of make sense as a deformation of the whole Riemann surface. So we will get some equation that tells us whether this is a good deformation. So let's do this for this case over here. So it's a little bit tricky, actually, because if you think about this, this is a double cover of the x-plane. So these Riemann surfaces you're getting out were always kind of, remember, this is a hyperelliptic curve, so it's a double cover. So there were these kind of cubes here, and we had branch cuts in the x-plane. So in some sense, in this, as you draw it as a Riemann surface, has two ends. So we have to be a little bit careful here, because in some sense you would say, well, I can either change the complex structure on the top or on the bottom. So there are kind of two open ends, and in some sense, if I look at this picture, I want to think it really like kind of a, perhaps like an S matrix, a scattering matrix that changes deformations here to deformations here. We'll see in a moment that's the right picture, actually. We connect actually this picture directly to the C equals 1 string. So in some sense, actually, there's a cleaner picture would be if you have a Riemann surface with only one end. And I will do that for a moment, but let's just go back to this case. So let's write this formula in that type. So we know what the solution of the matrix model was. Yes, yes. I will at the end. So the general class will of course destroy this structure. Yes. But let's, if you just we know what the solution was. So we knew that the full solution came from the loop equation. And if you just remember what the genus zero loop equation was, it had a very elegant form. So first of all, I want to write this. I can write this in general, as I showed you, as an expansion. Well, the first term is always kind of classical, just these coefficients tk were the coefficients in the superpotential. But this term here, of course, in the full matrix model, is an operator whose expectation value. So one way to write this thing is as a differential operator, namely to write this as the sum of dd tk x to the minus k minus 1, where this is something that should act on whatever you are computing. But for instance, if you would compute the genus zero contributions, this would be just the derivatives of the free energy, because they would be one-point functions. So what is the full solution of the loop equations? Well, you take this expression. So we find here, if you match with that equation over there, that the fk's, the subleading coefficients, are derivatives, in this case, of the genus zero free energy. So they're all derivatives of a single function f0. And what was the solution of the loop equation? Well, that was just a statement that if you take y squared. So what are we doing? We're looking at a general perturbation. But we want that the Riemann surface is not kind of torn apart. So that this y squared extends as a nice smooth function in the middle of the Riemann surface. So y squared should be a polynomial. But on the other hand, that just means that the negative components of y squared were zero. And this was precisely what the loop equation was. So the one way, geometric way to write the loop equations. So this directly turns into this zero, zero kind of constraint, ln on z, where zero for n greater than or equal to minus 1. And so we also learn a lesson from this, namely, if you do the full thing, so if you do not do the... So what is the old genus for the quantum case? Well, we have to do something similar, but now we have not factorization. So what we do is something different. We think of making a Fock space So the quantum case is just kind of, well, we just really quantize the field phi of x. So we write d phi in the usual mode expansions and identify the alpha ends so you make a mode expansion like this, then you write a coherent state T, which is just a general coherent state for the creation operators. And so on that coherent state, the operator alpha n is given by, I guess, d dt n, and alpha minus n is given by, well, no, I have to put an n somewhere, I guess like this. It's the other way around? I'm always confused. So alpha n brings down, yes. So this is the usual way to represent the coherent states. And of course, then this turns this scalar field d phi into this differential operator that I wrote down over here. Right, so this now becomes ktk and I guess it should also include some kind of some g string squared here. Sorry?
It looks like it wasn't.
It wasn't? Okay. Well, you have a better view on this, so. The usual coherent states is that, so if alpha minus, no, I think. It's correct? Okay, I trust you. Very dangerous. So now this turns this field d phi into a differential operator. Sorry? Okay, then that's a good motivation to write it like this. Yeah, so it's the alpha minus n's which are, yeah, so I think I choose that. Sir. I think. No, but then I turned. Okay, a good point, yes, because, this is the point at x equals 0, so no. So I'm sorry about screwing it up. In the end, we want to consider this state t, and then we want to have the field. So this is the general kind of picture in the operator formalism of conformal field theory. For instance, there you would have some Riemann surface here. You will have a local coordinate x here, and the point x equals infinity is the open end, right? So in some sense, you can represent that by a coherent state, and just put a coherent state here, and then the operator d phi of x will turn into this differential operator. So somehow the lesson here is that this fact that the complex structure deformation made sense, in the sense it didn't destroy the Riemann surface, it was smoothly defined in the interior, gets generalized to this quantum transformation that said that the corresponding action of the Virasoro algebra is realized as a quantum operator. Now actually there's a kind of a nicer way to, a few remarks to be made. So the first remark is that we can also do this directly in the double scaling limit. This is essentially just repeating remarks of 10 years ago. So if you do the double scaling limit, this curve will look differently. It will now be some odd polynomial, so it would be 2n plus 1, for instance. So by colliding branch points, so this would be the model 2,2n plus 1. And actually, the simplest model is just to take what's called topological gravity, which is the curve y squared equals x. So in that case, we just have, say, one single branch point, and the other branch point has been sent to infinity. So this is kind of a clean case, because in that case, you really have only one end. And so now you can write the same equations. So you can write y as dx of phi, Well, this now has should have an expansion since y squared is x. This would be an expansion half integer mode. So here you will have a sum over k, an integer plus 1/2. Keep taking. So the usual expansion, but now in half integer modes of x. And which is very interesting, because that's something that was known for from the solutions of that time along, that you have to do this in half integer modes. And then you would again get a Fiorisoro constraint. Which is ln on z is 0. But now expressed into this kind of twisted field. So where d phi is a twisted field. So this indeed is the solution. This is the so-called, so there's a lot known about these solutions. This is one way to pin down the solution altogether. But in fact, this leads indeed to famous solutions to, well, in general, to the KP hierarchy, but in this case, to the KDV hierarchy. So this is an alternative way to formulate the fact that you get here an integrable system depending on an infinite set of times, which are these variables tk. And then one thing that we see here, that we get one set of these times because there's one asymptotic end. So here we have, so the parameters tk just correspond to parameterization of this deformation at infinity. Yes? Right. Yeah. So in some sense, if you wish, you just take this prescription, forget that it came from a matrix model, if you wish. You just tune this, the geometry, which is completely equivalent to tuning the matrix model. But in the geometry, it's more, it means somehow more transparent. For instance, it's much more transparent that you get these fractional expansions. So that's a neat way to get these hierarchies. And in some sense now, you see that there is a structure here. And the structure will be that, in general, we have this Riemann surface that will have a number of ends. And depending on the number of ends, you get an integrable hierarchy in a set of variables. So I want to promote the following thing. So in this case of one end, we essentially get this kind of, well, in general, we get KP hierarchy, which is directly related to kind of these minimal models, so PQ minimal models. So C less than 1. Actually, the one matrix model, so this is kind of this double scaling limit. The one matrix model, it's in general, you would have some class with two ends. So I'll turn to that in a moment. In that case, you have, say, times tk in and tk out, here with only one class. So this will correspond, we'll see in a moment, to what's called a Toda hierarchy. And in particular, this will include the C equals 1 string. And then, but this should, then you can continue. For instance, it would be interesting to look at the next case, which is has three of these times. So this corresponds to the so-called topological vertex. And it gives some hierarchy, but I don't really know what the name of the hierarchy is. It's some kind of a three-toda hierarchy or something. But this is kind of a natural kind of classification of the, should be a natural classification of these integral systems depending on the set of time. So now I want to understand or explain that story about C equals 1, because I want to somehow refresh your memory of things that we studied 10 years ago about the C equals 1 string, which really fit very nicely into this picture. So let me make a few remarks about C equals 1 string theory. Yes? Yes. Yes. the Riemann surface itself only makes sense kind of at genus zero, right? Because in some sense you really do this quantum field. But I mean, I hope to show tomorrow that in some senses Riemann surface, the deformations of the Riemann surface is really like the WKB approximation of quantum mechanics. So in some sense you will see that actually in many cases there is a kind of an obvious guess for somehow a non-perturbative definition. But I mean, the picture should have in mind that in some sense you are, we're going to kind of quantize that that Riemann surface. And actually in the following picture, so the picture I'm having is that, so you think of this Riemann surface sitting inside this XY space, but X and Y were, so there was this natural holomorphic two form that you got from the holomorphic three form, which is the symplectic form here. So you want to think of this somehow as a kind of a Lagrangian in a phase space. And in fact, if you write the formula y is dx phi, then there's a natural kind of WKB wave function associated to this, which is roughly e to the phi. That would be the first approximation to the WKB wave function. And so in some sense, as in the usual way, which is kind of just the kind of Hamilton-Jacobi picture. So I want to, in some sense, consider at some point this as indeed the geometry itself as a classical approximation of a quantum wave function. And then so that's somehow the picture that seems to emerge for what this kind of quantization means in terms of geometric means. Other questions about this? So let me say a few words about the C equals one string. So I guess Juan will say more about it, but just remind you particular about the compactified theory. So this is a theory which has a world sheet variables, referral x and phi. Phi is the Liouville field. And x will, for me, be a Euclidean variable and compactified at radius r. And I'm particular, so it has t-duality, sending r to 1 over r. And I'm particularly interested in the case when r equals 1. So the world sheet Lagrangian, I'll just write it down once, but I won't do anything with it. So you have this dx squared, d phi squared. There's a coupling to the curvature with phi, and then there is some Liouville potential. So the important thing is that the excitations of this mode are, in general, two obvious string vertex operators, which are the tachyons, momentum states, which are e to the I kx, and then there are the winding modes, which are given by e to the I k x tilde, where x tilde is the dual field by t-dualizing this compactified scalar field. Now, if you are at C equals 1, at R equals 1, then you can use the equivalence with the compactified boson at radius 1 and the SU2 model at level k equals 1. And then means that a much bigger symmetry. In fact, there's an SU2 left cross SU2 right symmetry. And the fields of the string analyze, combine in multiplets of spin k over 2, k over 2, where the two extremal cases correspond precisely to the tachyon and the momentum states. So there's a very nice way to formulate this, and this is in terms of the so-called ground ring. So how you do this as follows, you introduce variables ai, bj, ij running from 1 to 2. And you have the two SU2s acting on A and B. And then elements like this are given by a polynomial of degree k in A, in the A's, times another polynomial of degree k in the B's. So a good way to parameterize these things is to introduce a matrix, a 2x2 matrix, AI BJ, which of course satisfies the condition that the determinant is 0. And then write general functions in this matrix M. And so I want to parameterize this matrix M as x, y, u, v. And if you do that, then actually you find that the variables satisfy, of course, the relation x, y minus u, v is 0. But this is just, I'm just writing down the representations of this of these polynomials at this point. So that's, in some sense, the story just in terms of the representation theory of the vertex operators of that theory at mu equals 0. So then Witten kind of showed, or made strong evidence, that at mu not equal to 0, you still have this ring of operators, but it's now deformed, and namely to the relation xy minus uv equals mu. That is to say, you expect that the physical spectrum of the theory here are all, so what does it mean? This means that you write down, so the physical states are polynomials in x, y, u, and v, modulo this relation x, y minus u, v minus mu. So that's the complete physical spectrum. So this is very, so this is in some sense, and I would I still have to say it's very nobody I think knows a closed expression for the scattering functions of these arbitrary functions. So this includes both the tachyons, the dual tachyons, and all the so-called discrete states which sit in between. So particularly in this level picture, it's interesting to think about the tachyons, because there you have the, so you think of these vertex operators e to the ikx suitably dressed with Liouville, and they correspond, depending whether it's k is positive or negative, to the modes x to the k or y to the k. So that is to say, in general, okay, so now comes the correspondence. So how is this story related to topological strings? Precisely, yes. So the correspondence with topological strings, so another claim, going back to Vafa and Muki and Vafa and Ogura and Vafa, that the sequence 1 at r equals 1 is completely equivalent, at least perturbatively, to the topological string on the so-called Kony fold, which is this geometry uv minus, well, let's put a plus here, equals mu. So this is a particular class of a non-compact Calabi-Yau. It's actually the easiest one. And the statement is that this is completely equivalent to the computations of the correlation functions over here. In fact, you have various extensions. For instance, if you want to do it not at radius 1, but for instance an n times the self-dual radius, then here you would get uv plus xy to the n equals mu. So there are, it's not necessarily connected just to the self-dual radius. So what does that mean? That means that in general, so correlation functions, string correlation functions will consider to deformations of this equation. So we have xy, we have uv plus xy is mu plus here a general, say, polynomial in all these variables. We can turn on arbitrary vertex operators. They will be given by polynomials in these variables. And so what we're doing, we're kind of changing the complex structure of this Calabi-Yau threefold. And in the classic deformation theory, so in particular genus 0 here, should correspond to kind of just a kind of classical deformation theory. And the higher genus quantities here are kind of the quantum deformation theory. Yes? So if I just think about the kind of this scalar field X, and just the Liouville field will always be there to give it the right dressing. Then X and Y are the tachyon at momentum 1 and minus 1. And U and V are the winding mode tachyon, the dual tachyon, at momentum 1 and minus 1. So they generate, so X and Y generate all the tachyon deformations. They are the, somehow the things that are left out if you take kind of this n to infinity. And you can do a similar story with the U and V. So I think this is quite ambitious, right? So actually, this I think this problem in general is not solved. Nobody knows how to compute these general correlation functions here. And do this general deformation of the Calabi-Yau threefold, which is actually also pretty formidable, because this would basically tell you that, in some sense, any Calabi-Yau threefold that can have a conifold singularity, right, would be some particular function over here. So that's kind of universality class of threefolds would be all be kind of connected to computing these correlation functions. So this is, I think, a very important model, because you just take your Calabi-Yau manifold, you have it like develop some kind of a conical singularity here, this conifold singularity. And the local information here would be somehow mapped to the general correlation functions in the sequence one theory. So it's a very difficult and ambitious to do. But you can do something easier, which is only look at perturbations of a special kind. So what we can do is only deformations of the tachyon momenta. So in terms of momentum states. So these are things built out of X and Y. So what we want to do with the first approximation, we want to take the conifold and add here some perturbations, say Tn x to the n plus Tn tilde y to the n, plus perhaps other terms. To leading order, we want to compute a function in terms of these t's. So for all practical purposes, we can forget about the U and V and formulate this as one of the questions we have been addressing in general. So in this case, our curve fxy is just xy minus mu, and we're going to deform that that algebraic curve. I could, but I think I have no idea how the answer looks like. So I'm just giving you somehow the best we know. So so this is actually a very beautiful story, how that model is solved. So there are various ways to solve this. And so let me first give you the solution of this problem at genus 0. So the way you solve this is as follows. You again think of the variables x and y. So I should again now draw a picture perhaps here. So how do you think of this this equation xy equals mu? Well, it's a complex curve. So if you draw it as a complex curve, it looks something like this. I mean, depending either whether x and y are, of course, if x and y are both real, you get a hyperbola. But if y is the complex conjugate of x, you get a circle. So this is something which looks like this. It has some kind of a compact slice, and so there are kind of, it's a Riemann surface which has kind of a natural A cycle. So this is defined using that y is the complex conjugate of x, and has a B cycle here, where x and y are real. And in fact, if you take a real slice, this is the usual kind of this is something which very naturally appears in the matrix quantum mechanics that leads also to the C equals one string as the phase space. So that picture will be used. In some sense, it's a complexified phase space. So we're now going to deform this curve. And so here, we use the variable y, so which is given as mu over x. But then we start to perturb it. And on the other end, we have the variable. So here, we have the variable x, which is mu over y. And we include perturbations. So let's write the equation. So the equations now we can write as the following. So we write y as mu over x. Then write some perturbation here, which I write as key just using the general philosophy. So I include two terms. These again are the leading terms. They show us how the variable y changes for large x. And these are the subdominant terms. And I again want to think of them as kind of the response of the system. So I want to think of them as the corresponding one-point functions in the theory. And then I write a similar equation for the other variable. So now I have to do it kind of in a symmetric way. So I have tk tildes, which parameterize the behavior of x for large variables of y, instead of which is small variables of small variables in x. And I write here df tk tilde y to the minus k minus 1. So the claim is now, so this is one way to set up the deformation problem. So now what we have done is something very simple. We have essentially write y as some function of x, and x as another function of y. And of course, for these to be compatible, you need that the g is the inverse function. So if you just take these two set of equations and you declare them to be compatible, so this solves this f, I should say f0, which is f0 as a function of the mu, the tk's, and the tk tildes. And in fact, it's well known that this solution is kind of a semi-classical, or the technical word is dispersionless, solution of the Toda hierarchy, the two-Toda hierarchy. So it's a very kind of cute way to solve this equation. So let's now think about it a little bit of in terms of kind of quantum field theory language. Sorry? Yes, first of all, it should be. And well, you want to have here one object that connects, you know, all the deformations. If you would do that, you would just have two separate deformation problems. So you say that you think, so what you want to do really is here to write y as a scalar field like this. So there's a scalar field now that controls the deformations of y. And then you want to write something similar, of course, for x. But so this is somehow, well, it should be the same field, but now expressed in the other variables. So this is one thing I want to kind of stress here. So we have here this geometry. So let's just think about it even in terms of classical field theory. So I want to think of this phi of x as a classical field living on the Riemann surface. So I have it over here. I have a classical field here for large values of x. And I have a field here, phi tilde of y, but should one and the same field. So what we see is this field phi. And so it's better perhaps to write this as kind of mu over x plus dx phi quantum, because these are the classical value of the field is mu over x. But then we look at small fluctuations in that. So here we have dy phi quantum. So what we see is that we get a natural way, kind of a scalar field, but it's not your traditionally scalar field, because it has very complicated transformation rules. And there's a good argument why this is the case, because remember what this kind of field phi is doing. It's deforming the geometry. So it's a scalar field that lives on a curve, but on the same time, turning on the scalar field changes the shape of the curve. So it's in some sense more like a gravitational field. So phi has kind of nonlinear transformation properties. Actually, it's kind of a nice exercise to solve these two equations for small fluctuations of phi. So in linear approximation, you get that dy of phi tilde is indeed dx phi times dx over dy. So in small, in the linear approximation, dx phi transforms like a one form. But if you really solve this to for large values of phi, then you get a very complicated transformation property. In fact, there's a nice way to formulate it as follows. And this is directly related to something. It's called the W constraints in the matrix model. So this is something we first found with Greg and Roland Plesser. And this is actually a nice way in which this connects to the full quantum solution that we'll come to in a moment. So, okay, one thing. So let's look at the transformation rules between these two fields. So what you do is you write dx phi in terms of its mode expansion. And similarly, dy phi tilde, alpha n tilde y minus n minus 1. And now you want to see how the modes alpha and alpha tilde are related, just by inverting that relation. And you can do the following thing. So look, for instance, at alpha n tilde. So what is it? Well, remember, this we want to call x, and this we want to call y. So what is it? It's the integral, if you wish, in contour integral, if I just want to pick out this component here, of yn dx. But I can actually now use a total derivative to write this as the integral of x d minus x d y to the n plus 1 over n plus 1. And so what did I do? What did I do? That's not what I want to do. Yes, what I'm doing. It's in my notes, but it's it's still white. Is it okay? I don't know what I'm doing here. I just want to do it differently, yes. Yeah, sorry, no, I wrote something completely wrong. So what is it? So we want to compute this thing. Which is, so what is d phi? Yeah, so I want to write y to the n, x dy. Right? That's what I want to do. Because x is my field d phi tilde, and I want to read off the nth mode expansion. So this I can write at x dy n plus 1 over n plus 1. And then after partial derivative, I can write this as the contour integral of y to the n plus 1 dx. So this is what? Well, this is dx phi to the power n plus 1. So we see here that's a nonlinear transformation. In fact, a single mode of the kind of outgoing field phi tilde is given by this complicated operator. In fact, this is a kind of a generator of a W algebra. So we see that there's a nonlinear relation between the alphas, the alpha n's, and the alpha tildes. And this is somehow encodes to genus zero scattering amplitudes. So what about the higher genus correlators? Well, these models are well known that, I mean, writing the higher genus correlators in terms of this boson field phi is a rather awkward story. And so somehow to go to higher genus, it's more natural to include fermions. And actually that's certainly the lesson, of course, we learned from matrix models on these times. So you can write the scattering amplitudes directly in terms of fermion. So what I want to do, I want just kind of bosonize or fermionize this boson. So we do the usual things. We write fermions e to the phi psi dagger e to the minus phi. And write del phi psi dagger psi. And write the same Fock space in terms of the fermions. So what is the answer? So I want to give you the answer in terms of the fermions. and then give an interpretation for that using brains later. And then we will take that interpretation and that setup and try to generalize it to a more complicated situation. So in general, what do we have? So we have this Riemann surface. It has two ends. So we want to associate it, so we have a Hilbert space here. We have this Fock space, H and H. So we want to identify with this with an S matrix that maps H to H. And we already saw kind of the classical behavior of this S matrix in terms of just deforming the Riemann surface, in terms of this collective field phi. But now I want to write it in terms of the fermions. So of course, the first question is, what is the geometric interpretation of these fermions in terms of the curve? So let me write down a claim. So in the topological string, we can include brains, the B brains, which are of the following form. So they are, so remember we have this Calabi-Yau general of this type. So we have this Riemann surface, F equals zero. And now we want to put brains here, so we want to put a brain. And you should think of the brain as being, so it's localized at fixed x and y, living on the curve. And it has kind of one non-compact complex direction, which you can say is like the u-coordinate, or you can choose any, the u or the v or any linear combination. So it's fixed x and y, and says v equals zero, and u arbitrary. So the question is, how are these transverse brains realized in terms of this theory living on the Riemann surface? And again, here, the matrix model, if you go back to the matrix model, this gives a good intuition what the things are. So remember, in the matrix model, well, we started with this matrix model, but the matrix model was built out of in a holographic way. So we started with some bunch of brains, actually n tilde brains. And then this made for us this corresponding Calabi-Yau manifold. And now what you can do is you can also put kind of transverse brains to the original brains that you started with. And what does that mean? Well, it means that you have, if this is a non-compact brain, you will have open strings going in between. So you have kind of bifundamental open strings. And that means that in the original matrix model, you will have your action trace W phi. But now you also include bifundamentals coupling to this. So you get some action which looks like Q phi Q tilde. And if you put them at, say, some position x, you get also QX, Q tilde. So these are now kind of fundamentals for this gauge group UN tilde. So in the gate theory language, it just means that you take an adjoint and you add some fundamentals to it. Yeah, so you can think of X as the well, it's the VEF of phi. Right, but you can just, I mean, if you can shift it away by shifting phi, but it's just the position on the brain. So it's the mass of the field in the n equals 1 theory. But in terms of this this Riemann surface, it will be the position. Sorry? No, x is just 1, say, so we just, if you do, if 1, sorry? It's 1 flavor. You could do n flavors. Yeah, so this has an index, say, a gauge index I, ij, j, and this is just, so just put 1 here. If you do that and you integrate out the qq tildes, then you just get an effective action contribution, because now you compute trace w phi plus log of x minus phi. Clearly, this is just the one loop term that you get by integrating out q and q tilde. But you can actually write this, of course, as a sum 1 over k x to the minus k phi to the k. So if you started with a superpotential tk phi to the k, you can see that there's another way to think of including these fundamentals and then integrate them out. That's namely just shifting the coefficients in your superpotential. So what you're doing is nothing but kind of shifting a little bit the values of the t's. So we find that we have a shift where we shift tk to tk plus 1 over k x to the minus k. And this you can do. So what are we getting? So we are getting, another way to say it, we have this matrix integral d phi. We're computing, as we did, trace w phi. And now we added this term, trace log x minus phi, which of course is equivalent to just the determinant. Now, in terms of our collective field, so remember that this, we had this collective field, del phi, sum tk. So in terms of this collective field, or in terms of the coherent state parameterized by the t's, this corresponds exactly to including a fermion. Right, because we now, since we shifted the decays like this, you see that, so let me do this a little bit more precisely. So I had this coherent state. This was the exponent dk alpha minus k on 0. If you now plug in these values, you get the exponent 1 over k x to the minus k alpha minus k. And this is indeed the vertex operator e to the phi x. So this is nothing but the creation of a fermion. So you see a very simple picture, introducing extra non-compact grains, so things which do not have a gauged group, so it's in some sense introducing flavor gauge group, or introducing just fundamentals in the gate theory, correspond in terms of this collective field just by putting in fermions. So the brains in the system are the fermions. So there are now kind of these two pictures that we have. So, sorry? Do they have the right statistics? Okay, so there's as you know, perhaps know very well, if you do this in this kind of Grassmannian or this coherent state picture, what you get is always you get the correlation function. If you do this, for instance, so one thing is that it's quite easy to do this for more than one fermion, right? So if you put kind of n fermions at position, say, x1 up to xn, then we just have to write the tk's as 1 over k sum over the xi, I running from 1 to n to the minus k. Which in some sense, it's also you can also organize them in some general, in some matrix x, and then it will be 1 over k trace x to the minus k. So that's a natural generalization, but this is in the integrable hierarchy literature, it's called the Miwire parameterization. And if you do this in this kind of coherent state picture, so in general, if you have something, now you have some state sigma representing a Riemann surface, you put a coherent state on the other, you do this shift, what you get is you get the correlation function. So shifting the t's in this way, you get the correlation function of the fermions, divided by kind of the same expression in the vacuum. So this is completely anti-symmetric, this is completely anti-symmetric, but the answer here is completely symmetric. Yeah, you have to shift the Fermi sheaf. Yes. So you're taking out the zero mode here. Yes, it's only the creation part. So there's a natural picture here where so we have kind of two ways to approach the system, just from a pure geometrical way. So I want to kind of stop here and then continue tomorrow connecting this to the explicit solution. So we have our geometry. So I want to kind of give you this picture in mind. So we have some geometry. Now one thing we can do is kind of deform the geometry somehow at the ends. And it's natural to do it, so we write these variables, y is to dx of phi. So we have a natural a closed string field, phi, which parameterizes the deformations. So these are kind of the closed strings. And they are given natural in terms of these chiral bosons. But there's another way, which you kind of leave the geometry as it is, but you put just some brains, which are the fermions, e to the phi. Now, there's already a kind of a little paradox here that I want to resolve tomorrow. So here we have this field phi, and you can define it like in this coordinate x and in this coordinate y. But you show that there's a very complicated transformation rule going from here. So this is not your ordinary boson. It's something which transforms from patch to patch in a very nonlinear way. But what about these fermions? Well, actually, you just look at this picture. What can happen? Well, you take your brain, and you just move it from the left to the right. I mean, it somehow cannot disappear or anything. So geometrically, it looks like if you just put a brain somewhere on your Riemann surface, that's well-defined. And you can just put it anywhere you want. So the fermions would be kind of global objects. In some sense, they should be free. There's no way in which the number of brains should change if you... So from this picture, these brains are kind of tautologically, they are free objects. So I think actually this is somehow... Okay, so I will stop here, but tomorrow I'll actually show how this indeed is realized in the sequence one string, how where we know very well that the scattering amplitudes from in and outgoing states are just... They're just free fermions, they just only pick up a phase. We will see how that phase is connected to that transformation rule of the bosons. And then we kind of take a leap and try to do this for general Riemann surface. So it will certainly not be successful, but there is the class of examples where this picture can be extended. So then I want to kind of somehow present that as a possible kind of unifying theme in the sense that we can consider, in general, some geometry, put the brains there, and study it kind of by these brain probes. And one thing I want to kind of give you also as a kind of food for thought is that the fact, at least in two dimensions, that there is bosonization and fermionization means that there are kind of two equivalent ways to look at kind of probing the system, either by these closed string, say, tachyon correlation functions or in terms of these fermions. And if such an equivalence holds, is that perhaps a lesson that more general can be applied to string theory? For instance, what does these kind of pictures mean in the ADS CFT context, would I think be very interesting to look at. So I'd like to stop here today. Greg?
When thinking of fermions in terms of brain,
yes. Yes. Right. Yes. Yeah, so I'm a little bit puzzled by how that works. So let me just say one remark is that the case which works very clean is this topological case. So if you have this y squared equals x geometry, and then you put kind of n brains here, then you would say, well, what I'm just computing, I'm computing this endpoint function. Well, okay, with some funny. As I will show tomorrow, it's very easy to immediately write down these fermion wave functions if you are given this geometry. And so I'm claiming that. So in fact, as you know, precisely, yes, yes. So I will claim this somehow directly. So for instance, if you do the one-point function here, and you have some wave function psi of x, so yes, put a single brain on this geometry, look at its one-point function, all genus in the, so I'm claiming in this case, it's there's a strong argument why it should be an eigenfunction of this differential operator. So it's an airy function. And then somehow putting n of these brains and the fact that they're not interacting means that you get kind of the matrix airy function, which is Kontsevich's formalization. Yeah, so that kind of fits kind of very nicely. So that's a good example where, for instance, the Kontsevich model, when he first wrote the answer, really amazing that you had this closed string expression, this closed form expression. But in some sense, I think the story here is it's much better to think in terms of these brains than in terms of these infinitesimal deformations of the geometry. Then you get a very complicated answer. But somehow in terms of the brain, since they are kind of free by definition, this should be some simple function of this matrix.
I just want to make a comment.
Yes.
These brains in the
C.1 yes.
language, is what they were called macroscopic loop operators.
Right. Yes, 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 yes. That's a good point, of course, that... well, let me... Yeah, so the thing I find, that's a very interesting point, because of course here we have these kind of geometrical directions in which brains are extended or something, but that these are not obviously connected to the Liouville field, right? This is in some sense just a picture in this kind of topological string where everything is really geometrical. But they are boundary conditions of what's allegedly be the same world sheet theory, yes. Yes. Okay, thank you.